Welcome to the J.P. Morgan Weekender. I'm Bruce Kasman. With me this week is Joe Lupton. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Pretty good. Where are you now, Bruce?
I'm in Hong Kong. I'm supposed to be in Mumbai. We won't go into that.
Whoops.
It's a story of me
Took a wrong
being an
turn at
idiot.
Albuquerque.
Yeah, it's a story of me being an idiot. But we're not that for that reason, among others. We're not going to go into it.
It's not a
So,
subtitle of the Weekender, is it?
maybe it should be, but anyway, let's get to the data and the kind of the issues at hand. And let me start by saying one of the things we've been, thinking about in terms of the global economy maintaining resilience as we move through the first part of the year is the idea that the U.S. isn't going to carry quite the same momentum it had in 2023, but that there's going to be other pieces of the global economy that are going to start to do somewhat better. And I think, that's one of the things we're feeling might be signaled from the data we're seeing in Jan, Feb. Around that, we obviously have the kind of confusing, I think, set of signals coming from today's employment report. And we obviously have central banks as well. But let's start with the data since, that's a key sort of part of our story. And I think we're feeling reasonably good about what we're seeing on the data front in that area. So why don't you take us on that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess I would start at the global level, and to me, I know the payroll report is what we'll probably talk a lot about, and it catches most people's attention. But the global PMIs are an important set of surveys for us. They're probably the single best tracker of global activity that you can have. It's monthly. It's timely. And I think what we've been kind of watching over the course of the year is a lot of resilience, but a lot of imbalanced resilience with a kind of a manufacturing sector that was struggling only to be offset by service sector normalization, with a US economy that seemed to be really taking the lead in the expansion, with Europe stagnating. And what the PMIs gave us, built on over the past couple of months, but I think really solidified in the February print we just got, is that both growth gaps are closing. You saw a nice move up in both the manufacturing and some move up in the services, but the move up in the manufacturing index was bigger and suggest a little bit of kind of convergence in the sectoral growth composition, which is certainly welcomed. And then also on the regional side, the European pickup in the PMIs is important because Europe really looked like it was flirting with recession through the second half of the year. PMIs have been edging higher, kind of making us feel a little bit more confident. We got another big move up, and we knew that from the flash readings, but nonetheless, the broad picture in the whole global PMI survey for this month, or I should say last month, really shows a broadening out in the expansion that supports the idea of, well, it can support two things. It can support resilience, right? Pushes off any type of near-term recession risk. I suppose the dark underside of it is that maybe it's going to point to kind of more growth and less disinflation. But I think that's a conversation for at least another topic later in this call or for another week. Right now, I think the message from the PMIs was quite strong.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think there's also some pieces of the details that are worth noting. One is that the CapEx sectoral survey went up and aligned with how other indicators are moving in our nowcast. So we're getting a decent move up there, which is encouraging to see.
Yeah.
I think it's
And the
also.
employment piece, I think, is I guess you and I differ a little bit on how important that is, but that is something that got quite weak around the end of last year, was worrying me of a potential break in the labor market. But it has moved up quite nicely into January. It didn't move up further in February, but it held on to the gains. And I think it allays some of the concern of a break in labor markets. And of course, this week's news from the US kind of underscores that to not to some extent, to a large extent.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, as you said, we were getting a reasonable signal from the PMIs in Europe, and we also got a decent demand indicator coming out of Japan with a particularly
Yes.
big move up in the
That was
numbers
a big
on
one.
CapEx. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
well,
really
it does
sticks.
two things. One, it kind of supports that broad CapEx point you were making. It's a reminder that businesses are not only expanding on the payroll, the employment side of things, but also on the business equipment side of things that Nowcast are picking up. An area of concern, the second thing it does is Japan in particular was becoming a bit of a disappointment. I'd been pushing our Japan team that with falling into a recession was looking unlikely the BOJ could actually leave its negative interest rate policy. But the MOF corporate survey you're referencing that came out this week was stunning. It was gangbusters. I mean, CapEx was just through the roof. I can't remember, it was set some record, but really points to a large upward revision to the GDP, overall GDP numbers for the fourth quarter, takes it out of contraction to something a little over 1% growth. And that's important both for Japan, for the global economy, and then also important for the BOJ call, which now looks a bit more likely that they'll be exiting NERP.
Well, actually, the debate on Japan is whether they'll exit NERP earlier than we expect in
No,
March
I know. Yeah,
or
yeah.
April. So
I mean, that's been
I
there
think.
for a while. It was looking to me unlikely they could even do it by June, which is our call. But now it definitely look, June is definitely on the table. And as you said, maybe even earlier than that.
Yeah, let's talk about the payroll report today, because I think we started just before this to have a couple minutes on that. I guess we have. Not that big a difference in interpretation,
Yeah.
but certainly we're kind of thinking about it a bit differently. You wanted to start with your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, to me, it felt kind of like a Goldilocks report because, you know, the thing that you've been seeing is too much of a good thing, payroll report after payroll report for the last kind of almost, what, 12 months? I don't know how long now, but it's just like super strong, tight labor markets. And I think this was a report that gave you both kind of solid, still strong increases in payrolls, underscoring resilience in the growth side. And I think the move up in the unemployment rate, in some sense, the reason I would put that into the Goldilocks bucket is it takes some pressure out. If there was a worry about the US economy, it was that it was kind of running too hot. And that could push you into the camp of a Fed that either has to stay high for longer or higher for longer, maybe even start raising rates again. I think this is it's one report. Of course, you don't want to get carried away with it, but on its own, if you just looked at it, I would say it tempers concerns about near-term recession because payrolls are still looking good, but it also tempers some of the things looking too hot with an unemployment rate that moves up. Quite, you know, it takes some of that pressure off. Two tick up, what, 2/10 up on the unemployment rate. Now, you could extrapolate that 2/10 move up in the unemployment rate and say not only is it taking pressure off, you know, the tightness of labor markets and pressure on inflation, and potentially resulting pressure on inflation, but maybe it's actually threatening the expansion, right? Like, you know, you've got these kind of SOM rules and these types of things that might worry you about a sharp break in the unemployment rate. That's where I think you and I differ a little bit. And I'm not painting you into a corner that
No,
you're ringing alarm bells.
that's not the
Okay.
way I would put it. And let me just start by saying
Yeah.
I think you're right that there's a lot in this report which will to some degree give the Fed comfort from the point of view of the pressure in the labor market. And I think chief among that is the fact that the unemployment rate moved higher. But I guess when I look at this report, I think about it in terms of what I understand and what I don't understand. And what I don't understand usually worries me. So I think it makes sense that we had the significant downward revisions given how strong the job growth was over 300,000 in both December and in January and December. And that kind of makes things look a little bit more in line with where we think the economy is. It obviously also makes sense that we had the rebound in hours in the work week and the moderation in wage gains from last month. I think that was easy to expect given how weather had an impact on it. And then I think when you look at job growth, you have a pace here that, while not as extreme as you had in the January report still looks quite strong. I mean, I don't know how you can feel comfortable by itself if you're looking at a pace of job growth, which over the last 3 months is running close to 250,000. But then, as you're looking at that, you have a household survey, which is sending a very different signal. You could talk about SOM rolls and risks of recession. I guess that's not really what I'm focusing on here. I'm focusing on the fact that the unemployment rate has been drifting up. And in recent months, it hasn't been drifting up because supply has been strong. It's been drifting up that in the household survey because labor demand has been weak. And therefore, you're getting two different signals about momentum in the economy. And we don't have to go to the extreme of asking the question of whether one is a recession indicator or not to kind of have a question in our mind that is basically saying, what is the actual position of the labor market at this point? And I think that just raises some questions in my mind, and it's harder for me to look at this labor market and take this report and say something relatively simple or straightforward. But I'm
mean,
puzzled
I don't
by
know.
the household
I
survey divergence from the establishment survey at this point in time.
mean, I if I look at the unemployment rate over the last 6 months, it's, I mean, what, 3.8 for starting back in September, 3.8, 3.8, 3.7, 3.7, 3.7, and now 3.9. I mean, I don't know. Like, really, that's what we're gonna, say is this grand mystical puzzle in the labor market? I don't think that's, it's a tight labor market and continues to be tight, and it moved up a little bit. Some pressure came off. And I totally agree that this moves the needle to me in the Goldilocks direction, but it's still pretty strong here. The one thing that I think might reconcile
But can
some
I
of the
just jump in
puzzle.
here and saying it's not again only a question of weakness. The period that you described of the movement up in the movement in the unemployment rate over that was a period in which the participation rate had stopped going up. So we're having an unemployment rate that's stable to slightly going up in a world in which job growth is running well above 200,000. So the question is, how do we make sense of that?
Yeah,
You know,
so
you don't
I
make sense of it. You don't make sense of it. You don't make sense of it in the following way, that the supply side is not signaling the cause of it on the household survey front, and what's signaling the cause of it is the fact that you're having very weak demand in the household survey, and that's not the message, of course, for the establishment survey. And that's where there's a puzzle here, which is where is labor demand in the economy, and which of these surveys, when looked
Well,
at
I
over
would have
this
thought the
longer
puzzle is
period,
where's the labor supply, less about where's the labor demand is pretty strong, right?
no, the
Like,
labor demand is not strong as measured in the household survey, for sure.
yeah, but this is where we get into the should we be looking at the levels of the household survey, right? I thought what you told me earlier before we got on the call is that you're not looking at that, you're looking at the unemployment rate, which is why I
I'm
think
looking at
that's
the
why.
unemployment rate, and then when I look at the movements in the unemployment rate, I then try to understand whether they're driven by supply or demand. If you want to say that because the establishment survey is the right measure of job growth and the unemployment rate is the right measure of labor market tightness, then you should ignore the details of the household employment and then assume that there's some bigger supply impulse, then that's fine. But I'm not sure I'd want to make those
Well, I think that
judgments.
is the case. And I think I posed this to you an email earlier, and I'm going to throw this out there, recognizing where this is happening on live television here. I mean, the immigration flows that have happened, there's been some talk, and the BLS has had some behind the scenes discussion about their measurement of immigration flows not being captured adequately, and how much of you say, where is the labor force coming? And that is how I'd want to look at it. I'd want to look at a strong establishment survey growth and then an unemployment rate that is suggesting some labor supply out there coming from somewhere. One might be unmeasured immigration flows.
But that doesn't line up with the fact that the BLS is incorporating what has been a
No,
rising
but I think the
share
argument is
of.
that they're not doing a good job with that. And that's the part, again, I apologize, I'm throwing you. You've probably not seen this. This is some things that I've been reading. I don't know either the details or the validity of it, but it seems to suggest that this is a part of the story. Which would the only reason I raise it is because it's so central to address the puzzle that you're raising. I don't know the answer
but
to
if
it.
But you still have to ask the question, if that's the case, then if the household survey is not capturing immigration and the
Right.
establishment survey is, then you still have to ask the question, why do we have a two-tiered economy if you're saying that jobs are being created because immigrants are being hired, but the non-immigrant labor force is actually not getting much job growth, or at least if you take the household
I
survey at face
agree.
value,
I
then
that
that
is
doesn't make sense to me as
no, it might
as
not.
a
I agree. It suggests that you're getting a lot of the job growth is coming at these presumably lower productivity, kind of lower, more service-oriented type jobs.
But that doesn't line up with the productivity data.
I know.
I mean, that's my point here is I'm puzzled by some of this. That's the
Yeah.
thing. It's not that I'm
I mean, the
drawing
thing,
a conclusion.
I agree. I just then say, well, let's just step back and let's get out of the weeds. I think growth is strong. I think you're seeing some easing in the tightness of the labor markets. I believe those two things. I don't think we're out of the woods, but I think this is a report that maybe moves you a little bit closer in that direction. That's what I would
Yeah,
say.
well, if you, I mean, obviously, if what you want to take from this, and it's certainly a reasonable thing to suggest, is that this is an economy that's got strong demand and strong supply, and through that, you're not adding pressure. That has mixed message for the Fed, but overall, given that you've had solid GDP growth and the unemployment rate is drifting a little higher here. Unless the inflation news continue to surprise to the upside after what we got from January, you do have I think, the flexibility here to think about taking something back. And I think that's a relatively straightforward way to look at where we are. I'm still, when I kind of put that together, still just too many things here that kind of puzzle me in terms of how I put this together and making sense of it. But anyway, let's not continue to obsess over this, and let's maybe talk a bit about central banks. We did say a few words about the Bank of Japan a second ago, but we had the ECB. We had Powell give testimony here. It does feel like they're guiding us towards mid-year, and then we'll see where the
Yeah.
data take us. Anything? I guess I was a little surprised by Powell being willing to say that we're close. That was the one thing that kind of sort of stepped out of the messaging from the last meeting, is just providing a little bit of that flavor that he still thinks we're pretty close to beginning the easing cycle.
Yeah, I mean,
And
I took that to be kind of a bone thrown to those that are going to hammer him on why aren't you easing rates already? But yeah, I mean, I think the message from both was that it didn't really change the message much. And that is that, it's close, but they're not there yet, and they need to see more progress before they get there. I guess I will say it seemed like the ECB, both the statement and Lagarde's comment was probably a little more surprising. Was a touch more dovish than what you had seen in the past. And then, by the way, that showed up very clearly in the natural language processing. Both moved quite significantly on the statement and the Lagarde speech, seemed to be the
And I would just
interpretation.
say that there was also, I think, a little bit more of a willingness to push inflation forecast down into 2025 on the part of the
Yeah,
staff.
exactly.
So
Yeah.
that also, I think, either reinforced
Now
or coincided with it.
it's possible that this is very similar to what happened to the Fed in December, right? Remember, the Fed in the December came across as very dovish because it changed its forecast. It was a SEP round, and they lowered a lot of the kind of fears of kind of embedded inflation. And then Powell had to kind of recognize that, over the last 6 months they had really gotten less inflation than they expected. And that came across as super dovish. And I think Powell and the company realized, how that was going to come across. And then they had to clean that up over the next kind of few. This could be similar, which is they have a forecast round where they kind of little less inflation than what they had in before, and that is kind of viewed a bit more dovishly. They had to talk about that. That comes across as a little bit more dovish, even though they're not changing their mind on, you know, this is going to be like a June or maybe even later start, which I think Greg is like, June's the official call, but it's somewhere between June and September he's probably comfortable with.
Okay. We're getting next week's CPI. We know what the forecast is.
I don't,
am I right,
Bruce,
that we're getting CPI? I'm not sure I've got that.
Right. No, I think you're right, Bruce.
I think, yes, I know what the forecast is, but I'm not sure. I think it's a 0.3, but I'm not 100% sure of that. So we shouldn't take that, which would be interesting because it would be keeping a firm reading in place for the second month in a row.
Definitely would.
And
I think in terms of, go ahead.
No, obviously that's going to come out just before they meet. It will kind of be processed, and I think the Fed's going to stay on message here, but I think there's a kind of a real question. If we do get that kind of a reading on the CPI, then you're going to really need it to have a bit better inflation news in the next month or two to kind of keep you on track for the June easing. So it's, you know, the June easing is, I think, where they're guiding us towards, but the data here needs to deliver. As you noted, the rise in the unemployment rate here alongside strong payroll growth keeps them comfortable, but I think you do need some support that the January inflation spike wasn't a shift in trajectory and was just sort of a bit of an aberration around the trend.
Mm-hmm. At the risk of kind of going into, you know, broad areas here, the thing that kind of has changed my thinking a little bit is on the wage side in the US, and recognizing, you know, a part of the story of sticky inflation is that the super core, the ex shelter service part, is the one that's more tied to the cycle and to tight labor markets, and we've made a lot of hay out of that story. What has changed in my thinking a little bit is the linkage between wages and the quits rate. And we did get the JOLTS data this week, and quits rate keeps coming down, and has come down a lot. And it's one of the things that I think is disconnected from the unemployment rate tightness in a way that you could start to say, well, yeah, labor markets are tight, but this, you know, falling quits rate seems to have a much tighter linkage with falling wage inflation. That kind of short circuits in my mind a little bit the kind of high for long or too darn hot sticky inflation story. Not completely, but if part of your story was labor market staying tight and that keeps a pressure either on corporate margins or firms want to keep raising prices as a result, maybe this is taking some of that pressure off in a way I hadn't fully appreciated. Is that, I know you've got this chart in your chart book that's showing the same relationship. Is that something in your mind as well? Are you looking at it similarly?
Well, I'm looking at it as an important indicator, and I agree with you. I pay more attention to quits rates than I do to vacancy rates because I think they've had a bigger impact on the labor market cost structure here. I think we're still at a level of quits that is consistent with wage inflation, 4% or higher, which I think is a level you need to get below to kind of get service price inflation down. Obviously, you can have productivity.
I don't think that's right, but I don't want to. We can talk about that offline. I actually think it's come down a lot more, and it's consistent with maybe still elevated, but nothing that I would be very concerned. It points to a much bigger drop in wage inflation than I had appreciated.
Okay. Well, we can debate this one for next week, but I think we still have a ways we need to go here. And I do think it's more likely than not to start leveling off, but we'll see where we go here. I do think if it keeps moving down here is a signal that you might be getting more wage disinflation. But we'll see how that one goes. Anything else that we should be talking about here that is kind of
I
important.
mean, look, I don't want to open it up. We don't really have the data, but the China data should be coming out relatively not, I don't think that's out next week. I think it's the week after, which will be a big print for people watching because it will be both the January and February data.
But we should probably mention we got super strong export data this week
Yeah, we
from
did.
China. That's
Yep.
one of the things that's kind of contributing to this sort of sense of a broadening base. But
Yeah.
yeah, China, I think the China data is going to matter. It's very hard for me to see China really disappointing in a big way. Maybe I shouldn't say that because it'll jinx us on the reports. So I've kind of put China as something of
Well,
a
certainly for the
neutral
first
force
half.
here. Yeah, for the first half, and then who knows where we go. But if China is a neutral force, I think the big swing factor here is whether we're broadly right on the Western European and Japan story, which again, we should end on this note. We're feeling a little bit better there in terms
Yep.
of what we've been seeing. And that certainly is important if if neither the US nor China are doing anything, that's really surprising to the downside, which again, that seems to be the way things are playing out. So maybe we'll end here. Thanks to everybody, and let's hope we can continue the conversation next week on the Weekender.